The Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. Every man knows how scary it can get when going for a close shave below the belt. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Inside this package, you'll find the star of the show, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Their fifth generation trimmers features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. We also have dual LED spotlights to provide contrast on multiple skin tones, three length setting combs, and oh, did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Now that you have the perfect haircut, use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness even at the hottest summer barbecues. The Crop Soother, aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafe ball deodorant. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 5.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. More wet products? Say no more. Manscaped's new Buff Bundle is all you need to keep the summer heat a breeze. The bundle includes their signature silicone scrubber and body wash. Ditch your nasty loofah and grab a taste of freshness.
All aboard! Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 73. I'm Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here. With me, as always, Peter Harling. How you doing, Pete?
Hey, Victor. I'm good, my friend. It's good to be back on the show. Hockey's 1 week closer. I think football started, but I don't do football.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Football started. Actually, it was pretty exciting. And as we're recording this, my 49ers are playing. So anyone that knows me knows that I'm a huge football fan as long as the Niners are good. And if they're not, I don't care at all.
On board the bandwagon, huh?
With other sports, I'm happy to do that. It's just I don't have the bandwidth to follow anything else that closely.
Right. Well, if you got into fantasy football, I'm sure that would change. So I don't advise you getting into fantasy football because that would consume all your unavailable bandwidth.
Yeah, actually, I am technically in a league that I am part of, Jesse's four sport league, but I have a co-manager that manages football, baseball, and basketball. So I just see that our team is doing something and I don't really have to do anything about it, which is kind of nice. Although we're doing terrible this week, so whatever.
Sounds like half my fantasy teams. I got one that's over the cap, and I don't know how I'm gonna have to spend some draft picks to get out of trouble or buy a player out. But I've never bought a player out in fantasy hockey, and I'm kind of proud of that streak, and I really don't want it to end.
Well, there's always a time for everything. First time for everything,
I suppose. I just need someone to get a season-ending injury, and that'll be fine. But I might go Tanya Harding on Andrew Mangiapane or something.
All right. If we see that, we know what happened. We know why it happened.
Yeah, I outed myself. On with the show.
Yeah. So today, last week, we talked about some players from the EP Top Fantasy Guide that were better in real life. This time, we're going to talk about some guys that are a little bit, should be moved up in your fantasy ranks. So a little bit more on the positive end here. Guys that we're more excited about in fantasy than real life. So that's what we're going to talk about. Before we do that, we're going to remind you that this episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for more great hockey podcasts. You can use your DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. More on that in a bit. And we're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It's got all the cool bells and whistles to set up your league. Great scoring categories, amazing draft room, draft pick trading, treasury option, and so much more. Use the promo code to sign up for a free league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. And yes, it's Pete. I'm going to start with the first one here. And this is a guy that we have talked about some, but I think it's worth kind of revisiting. And that is none other than Carter Yakimchuk, who appears 36th on this list, which is kind of, decent representation for Yakimchuk. He was taken 7th overall by the Ottawa Senators in the most recent draft, 2024. We were there. It was a bit surprising. I think he went a little bit earlier than a lot of us thought he would in terms of the defensemen that we thought were kind of near the top of the list there. He's 62% rostered on Fantrax. And on my rankings of the 2024s, I had him 7th overall, which is where he got drafted. So a little bit higher in fantasy than you might think of him in real life. So let's talk a little bit more about Yakimchuk. Definitely someone who's pretty interesting in fantasy. He's right-handed, he's physical, he can score, at least at the junior level. I think the handedness and the scoring prowess is probably part of the reason why he went a little bit higher than we thought. He's also got good size. He's pretty physical, you know, and he had, I was looking this up actually, 5th most goals ever by a WHL defender. So he can really put the puck in the net, at least at that level. I think part of the question for me is what he does away from the puck, which is still a bit of an adventure. Sometimes he misreads things. Sometimes he makes some poor plays. Some of that's to be expected at this level. But sometimes there's some questions of the hockey sense and how much that can improve, because there's a big difference between him being a 24-minute a night top pairing right-handed defenseman versus a second or third pairing running a power play. There's a big difference in terms of your fantasy value as well. And so he needs a little bit of work off puck. Looking at Mitch Brown's tracking data, it's not as bad as you would think in terms of the defensive game. 63rd percentile for the defense, Corsi against, entries prevented, that kind of stuff. His transition game is also not amazing, 61 percentile. So he has some pretty good entries, but his exits and getting out of his own zone, his transitions are not super great. But the offense is incredible, 97th percentile. His expected goals are really a big part of it. I mean, they're really high. His expected primary assists aren't really that great at all. They're just barely above average, which is kind of surprising for such a high octane defenseman. And looking at my Fantasy Hockey Life player card, his hits and shots are pretty massive. So that's going to give you great bash, but the blocks are pretty low. And maybe that's because he was on a good team and didn't have to block the puck much. So maybe he can get more of that. Overall, I rated him as a 6.36, which means a 36% chance of being a 6 out of 10 on your roster, 60th percentile guy. And so a little bit lower, but looking at some of the other markers, the hockey prospecting model has him really high, 53% chance of being a star, 77% chance of being an NHLer. And one of the comps that I pulled up here is what some people have been comparing him to, and that's Evan Bouchard. And obviously we're seeing Bouchard be a just massive superstar right now, not just because the points are super high, but he also is pretty great at all the perifs. So he's just massive value all around. And they said some of the same things about Bouchard in his draft year, like the hockey sense, you know, great offense, but can he defend well enough? And he's, I think, pretty much proven all those doubters wrong at this point. He can defend well enough, if not above average in many cases, and he's got, you know, foot speed and the sense and the physicality to be good. So I think if he comes at least, you know, to average defensively, Yakimchuk has a pretty good chance of being a pretty high-end fantasy producer. I'm just, what concerns me more is that his assist rate and his primary assist, expected assist, isn't higher, because I don't think all those goals are going to translate. And so how much can he create that's assist and not just goals is part of my concern for him. But I do think he's someone who's probably going to be pretty valuable in fantasy. And I think if we were doing the top 100, he probably would be a little bit higher than 36. Don't you think, Pete?
Yeah, probably. I mean, this is a player that I like as well. And I like to compare him to Brent Burns a little bit. He's got the size, the offensive ability, and the hits and the bash as well. So those are all some pretty desirable things. I'm not super excited about the fact that he was drafted by the Ottawa Senators. They don't have a super tremendous track record of player development, and they've got a pretty deep blue line, although they traded Chikrin at the draft there. So that opened up a roster spot, but that's okay, because Yakimchuk's a couple seasons away from competition with the Sens roster anyway. I think his fantasy upside is very high, especially if he lives up to the Brent Burns comparisons, don't you think?
Yeah, and actually I have heard that as well. I'm not sure, because he does have a booming shot, so I think that's part of it. He's got the size, he's got the shot, Burns was a bit of an adventure back in the day. And actually, some people have said, what if Yakimchuk played forward? Some of the comments I saw was actually that he is more puck hungry and an on puck producer than even most of the forwards on his junior team, the Calgary Hitmen. So I don't know if there's any truth to those rumors that they might try him at forward. I kind of doubt it, but it is kind of interesting that you brought up that comp as well. So I could see it. I could see it working out. I mean, obviously, it could go, sideways and not really be that tremendous of value because both Bouchard and Burns were fantasy gems. So that's the high end outcome. It could be closer to, a little bit lower than that, but that's still a pretty great potential.
Yeah, I think he's going like he was drafted pretty high. He's going higher in fantasy drafts, I think, than I would have expected a month before the draft happened in June as well. So speaking of defensemen, I got one too for my first guy up. That's Zane Parekh. So I think last week, Victor, you took like the top half of the rankings and I picked guys out of the bottom. And I think we flip-flop this week. I think you got guys that are ranked further down the charts, and I just picked up some cherries off the top of the list. So Zane Parekh was ranked 8th overall on this list, and his Fantrax roster ship is only 68%, which I thought was a little surprisingly low. Not egregiously low, but surprisingly low. I thought it would be close to 86 and 68. He was selected 9th overall by Calgary at the draft just recently. But he is definitely going higher in most fantasy drafts. He's the 4th-ranked player on the EP draft guide for fantasy ranking, the draft. We'll maybe talk more about that in a week or two. So this is a player who I think widely you're seeing him go higher in fantasy drafts than 9th overall. Like he is closer to 5th overall in most of the drafts that I've participated in than just inside the top 10. His fantasy value, I think, is higher because he's just mainly an offensive defenseman. He had 33 goals and 96 points in 63 games with Saginaw this past season. That was good enough to lead the league defense in goals and in points. He was an OHL All-Star, OHL and CHL Defenseman of the Year, and he won gold at the Hlinka, and he won the Memorial Cup Championship with Saginaw. So he had a pretty good season. His real life value is very high, but I think his fantasy impact, Victor, is perhaps even better than his real life. And this is, I just read off all his accolades from last season. He's got 2 more years of junior development to go before we see him competing in NHL roster in all likelihood. But I think he is a surefire NHL player. Unlike some other high offensive defenders coming from the OHL and junior hockey in the past, guys like Ryan Merkley, and we've had this conversation on previous episodes. He has no issue with size. Zane Parekh is 6'1", 185, so there's no red flag there. So what about defensively? I think he defends well enough to play right now top pairing minutes, and that aspect of his game can improve significantly. We saw it improve significantly in his draft year, and he's got, like I said, 2 more seasons of junior hockey development to make further gains in his defensive awareness as well. And I think, if you're Calgary and you're drafting him and your player development for the Calgary Flames, aren't the instructions you're giving him round out your game at the junior level, work on your defensive game, work on the physicality? Like you've got the offense and the hockey sense. That's why we picked you 9th overall in the first round. Round out the rest of your game, and so that the adjustment to pro when you make it will be even better. So his shots on goal per 60 is through the roof. His offensive points are all through the roof. Looking at his Fantasy Hockey Life player card, which I was given access to, thank you very much. It's good to have insider perks. His bash is okay. His blocks and hits are actually kind of low. He does play a little bit of a greasy game, and at times I like that, and at times I haven't liked the kind of grease that he brings. Like he's a little high with the stick a couple times, and he got suspended for spitting, which I don't really care for. But if he can stay on the right side of that walking the line edge and bring a little bit of grit and sandpaper to his game on top of the offensive dominance that he's going to have. Like some people were saying, oh, comparisons for him in his draft year could be Erik Karlsson. Well, Erik Karlsson is like a super, super elite outlier offensive fantasy unicorn. I don't think Zane Parekh is going to be in the Erik Karlsson in his prime category, but he's going to be damn good. And I think, you know, his fantasy value will be higher than his real life value. Because, like I said, he's got to work on his defense and physical elements of his game. But even if he doesn't really improve those and make them part of his bread and butter, he's still going to be good enough to play in the National Hockey League. And it'll still be very relevant in fantasy hockey. Any comments or thoughts on my analysis on Parekh there, Victor?
I love Zane Parekh. So, yeah, I think I agree with pretty much everything you said. I think that he absolutely is going to be someone who could be one of the best fantasy prospect defensemen for a long time until he kind of makes it. I think his upside is massive. You know, I mentioned before the draft, I think he's one of the few players in this draft that has point per game upside, and he's a defenseman. So, you know, that's pretty incredible. I do agree with you. His defense is good. People like to question that. I don't think there's going to be a problem. Sometimes he gets a little, gets a little too much stick work. I wonder if some of the lack of periffs were just because his team had the puck all the time. So hard to get hits and blocks when your team and you, in particular, have the puck a lot. So I think there he might be closer to average than some of those stats currently show. But that remains to be seen. I don't have any concerns about him. I think you should want him in any format, even if it's a multi-category league. I would want shares of Zane Parekh anywhere I could. And I had the decision in many of my drafts this summer at third overall, and I took Parekh every single time. So I have lots of shares of him.
Wow, over Teje Ginla, over Lidstrom.
Yep, it was actually between Kadden and him for me. That's where the decision landed for me. I wasn't as high on Lindstrom, although I understand the appeal. And Tiege, I love Tiege, but I'm just not sure he has that high-end upside. I think he might. But yeah,
Yeah, that
I went Parekh.
the Lidstrom back injury is, I just I don't think I could spend that kind of draft capital on a player that might have a limited career, you know?
It makes me a little nervous, that's for sure.
Who's your next guy?
So my next guy is Bradley Nadeau, and he's someone that I'm pretty excited about. EP has him at 40th overall. He was 2023 30th overall pick by the Carolina Hurricanes, and he's 5'10", 172 pounds, right shot, right wing. And he's a really fascinating case because he was drafted out of the BCHL, in case anyone doesn't remember that. 55% rostered on Fantrax, by the way. Penticton is where he played, and he had an insane draft season, 113 goals or points in 54 games, 45 goals in 54 games, just bananas numbers. But then you're like, okay, but it's the BCHL. All right. So it's, you know, it's a lower league. So you kind of like not sure, but we knew he had a really good shot. So it's like, okay, well, let's see how he does in the NCAA. 46 points in 37 games, 19 goals as a rookie in the NCAA. I mean, that's bananas production, especially considering he was 18 the entire season as a May 5th birth date. So he had a really incredible draft season, a draft plus one season, sorry. And he did play in one NHL game, didn't look too bad. I think that you might think like, oh, maybe there's some shooting variance. And I did look at that. He shot 21% in Penticton, 25% in the NCAA. So on the one hand, you could say, well, he's not going to shoot that high in the NHL, which I would agree with, but he also looks like he's a high efficiency shooter. And the question is, can he do that in the AHL, NHL? I don't know, but I think he's someone that can probably shoot closer to 15% in his career than the more average of like 8 to 10. So he's a shooter. What I like about him in the Carolina organization is that they don't have a lot of finishers like that. He could be their man, and he already having an NHL game, he could get that opportunity really soon. We'll have to wait and see about that. But he's someone who's pretty NHL ready, so the wait time is pretty minimal. I don't know that he actually plays in the NHL this year, but when we had our guest on for Fantasy Hockey Life, they said there's a pretty decent chance that Nadeau plays a good part of the season in the NHL this season already. So that's pretty nice. Kind of depends on how camp goes, obviously. We'll know more in the next couple of weeks, but he could be, wait time could be zero, which is pretty fantastic. He doesn't actually shoot as much as you would think for a goal scorer. He's more of the close, just under three shots a game in the NCAA. That's part of why his shooting percentage is a little bit high, because he doesn't shoot that much, but he's a pretty high converter, high efficiency converter. So you'd like him to shoot more. He's only 80th percentile for the NCAA, but he also hits a fair amount and he blocks a fair amount. So his bash overall should be like 70th percentile, which is pretty nice. And I was really curious, because I was wondering this. So what are some other BCHL to NCAA guys that he comps to? And the most obvious one is Alex Newhook, who we're seeing as being kind of a pretty average producer and maybe kind of a disappointing fantasy asset. And Nadeau had a better draft season than Newhook, but his draft minus one season was a little bit more modest, and so his hockey prospecting equivalency is a little bit lower than Newhook's in his draft season. But then in his draft plus one season, he skyrocketed up to 46% chance of being a star. So there's a pretty high equivalency there, and he looks better than Newhook in the model already. So we'll have to wait and see how that works out. But I'm really high on Nadeau. He doesn't have huge off puck concerns. I mean, he's not gonna win any Selke trophies, I don't think, but he doesn't have the massive off puck concerns that some high scoring forwards do. And he's really good at finding those spots and getting his shot off. And I think he's a little bit of an underrated playmaker. His assists per 60 in the NCAA were 100th percentile. So that shows that he's not just a goal scoring machine. He can actually set up a lot. And he played for Maine. It's not like he was playing for an NCAA powerhouse, putting up all these points. So I am pretty high on Nadeau. I am trying to get him everywhere I can, especially in leagues where I'm competitive in Dynasty now. I want him on my team now, because I think there's a chance he could squeak into camp or at least play some games this year. And if not, be full time next year after one season in the AHL. So his rise to me is meteoric, and I would have him much higher than 40th on my fantasy rank, even though that's it's a pretty high number in terms of all the prospects having him at that point. I think that's a pretty decent number. It's not I don't think it's bad per se, but I am even higher on Nadeau. And I was just looking up, I have him 44th on my list of all the top prospects. So but I think my list includes more than what the EP ringside list does. So I'm pretty high on him, Pete. What do you think?
Yeah, I like him a lot too, Victor. I'm not sure that his fantasy value is much higher than his NHL value. I think his overall value is understated across the board. I think he's an underrated prospect. I did the Carolina Hurricanes and the Dauber Prospects guide, and I called Nadeau their top forward prospect, their best points only prospect, and their top sniper. I compared him to Thomas Vanek, and I gave him like a best case scenario upside as like a 30 goal, 50 assist, 80 point guy. And then I think for the average of his career, he's going to come in around the 20 goals, 55 point kind of range. I'm not as convinced as you are that we're going to see him in the NHL this season. I think Carolina's a pretty patient developing team. So, I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that he plays so well that he forces his way onto an NHL roster and into an NHL job right away. But, he's come so far so fast. I think a little bit of American Hockey League development time couldn't hurt him. All right, so moving on to my next guy.
I mean, I don't disagree with that, but the only reason I would say that I think his fantasy value is higher than his NHL value is just in general, I think teams value, like centers, guys down the middle, and like defensemen a little bit higher. Wingers tend to have a little bit less value, which he clearly is. So, I mean, that's the only, I think he's actually listed in some places in a center, but he's not a center. He's going to be a winger. So that's the only reason I would say that maybe he's, higher in fantasy. But I think you're right in terms of some rankings have him pretty high just because of what he can do, but I think that they tend to favor the guys that can play down the middle or in the back or on defense rather than the wingers. So even though he could be a high scoring winger, they still tend to undervalue those a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, so my next player that I want to talk about here, Victor, is Berkley Catton. He was ranked 17th overall on the EP Ringside article that we're talking about. His Fantrax rostership is 66%. See, what he was the leading scorer for the entire 2024 draft class. He had 116 points in 68 games, and that point total outpaced everybody else. Now, granted, he played 68 games, which is way more than the NCAA, but he led the whole class in points, is my point. He was drafted 8th overall by Seattle and was ranked 6th on the EP guide for fantasy ranking the draft. So his fantasy value is higher than his NHL value according to the actual NHL draft and Cam's ranking of. He is a little undersized for a forward, though. He's 5'11", which isn't too egregious, but he's only 174. And he's really just an offensive player. He doesn't really bring much else to the table in terms of physicality and hits and blocks and bash or anything like that. If he's not scoring, I'm not sure what his contribution is. But the good news is he scores quite a bit, so his contribution is phenomenal. He could be the most offensive and dynamic player in Seattle, in the entire organization. That's including Matty Beniers and Shane Wright in that equation. Like, he could be a more prolific offensive player than anyone they have on the roster or in the organization. So that's kind of where I'm at with Cat and seeing him as a player that has more fantasy value than real life value. I mean, like I said in our interviews from the draft, I said to Ron Francis what his expectations are for Berkley Catton when he arrives in the NHL. I mean, he's coming off a monster season in the WHL, and Ron Francis didn't miss a minute to take advantage of that setup and said, I expect him to have monster seasons in the National Hockey League. So we'll see if he can do that. I'll be pretty happy because I've selected him twice in two of my fantasy leagues now. So I am a Berkley Catton roster percentage for Fantrax there. What's your take on Catton, Victor?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I do think he's going to be better in the points only setup, as you mentioned, but who knows? We'll see. I mean, he had to do everything for his team. I think that was a big issue for Spokane. I mean, they would have done nothing without him or not much. And so maybe when he has a little bit more talent around him, maybe we'll see more of the Prifs. I kind of doubt it, but he did a lot of the heavy lifting and does seem to score a lot with points. So we'll see. I love him too. As I mentioned in my Parekh comment, I think he's the fourth best prospect from the 2024 draft. We'll see how that ages. But that's focusing mostly on points. If you're including Prifs, then maybe some other guys come into the question. He may be good at faceoff wins, you know. So if that's a thing for
Yeah.
you, he does seem like he's more likely to be a center than maybe some of those other guys. So that could help him. But I love Cat, and I think that was one of my favorite moments too when you were talking to Francis, because I overheard that and I was like, oh yeah, that's you love when your GM is that high on you as well, you know. So that's good. I'm sure that felt good for the young man to hear too.
Yeah, for sure. All right, who's your next?
We're gonna go next to Brad Lambert, and he is a pretty interesting prospect. 2022 30th overall pick. EP has him ranked 50th, and he's 6 foot, 183 pounds, right shot, center slash wing. I have to just be really upfront and say that I was pretty out on this guy in the 2022 draft. I mean, I think there was a lot of questions about just what the heck was going on with him in his pre-draft seasons. He was being talked about as a top five, top three talent. You know, someone who could, you know, he was already playing Liiga as a 17-year-old over in Finland, and everybody was losing their mind about him. And he's always been a fantastic skater. He has a lot of the tools, but the question was, can he put it all together? And he really struggled in his draft season, changed teams, never really produced. Then he went to the Seattle Thunderbirds, which was an insanely talented team. In his draft plus one season, he scored a ton of points. And I still feel like I didn't really have any of my questions answered. But last year he was solely in the AHL and he had a bonkers season, 55 points in 64 games, really high in production. And so I watched some of those tapes, and I think that some of the hockey sense issues, some of the adjusting of the pace, learning how to get inside, learning how to be more of a playmaker, I think that he's come a long way, and I think that he deserves this bump up in the ranking. And I'm pretty all in on Lambert now. I think that he is one of the top prospects in the organization. It's really funny looking at his PNHL League chart because it looks like a giant U because it was really high in his under his pre-draft season and then bottomed out during his draft season, and then he's come all the way back up to near point per game PNHL this season with his strong AHL production. So I do think that he's going to compete for a job in camp with the Jets. They have notoriously slow played their prospects, so that makes me a little bit concerned that he can produce, but or that he can make the team, but we'll see. I think that they're kind of at a point where they may have a spot for him. My Fantasy Hockey Life rankings has him as a 7.27, so I have him pretty high, 27% chance of being a seven, which is pretty high, top of your roster kind of guy. I think he might be more of a points only kind of guy because he shoots a fair amount, but he doesn't hit or block a lot. He does actually take a fair amount of PIM, so if you're into that kind of thing, maybe that'll be good. It's always concerning though looking at his hockey prospecting card because it looks awful. I mean, basically all of his comps are replacement level guys or busts. And that's because he had such a difficult time during his draft season that there was really no way that he could recover at this point. So I think that that's a little punitive for his long-term outcome. But he would be breaking some statistical models if he became a star producer at this point, which is okay. It happens. That kind of thing happens. But and I also have to give props to our buddy Scouch, Will Scouch, who had been, I think he had him like what, third or something in that draft class, and he held firm to that notion to this day. So he was one of the few Brad Lambert true believers, and things are coming up roses for him at this point. So I hope it continues, and I think Lambert could be with the Jets as early as this season. If not, I think it's he should be at least see some call-ups. And then maybe the following season, full time. So the wait time is going to be minimal, which is kind of nice. What do you think, Pete? Am I too excited about Lambert?
I don't know. I don't know. I formulated an opinion on him in the second half of his draft year, and it wasn't a good one. And that opinion has been affirmed for about a year. And he's starting, like you said, he's turning the corner, and it's hard to ignore the season he had in the American Hockey League as a rookie. So that's pretty impressive. So I think I need to let go of my bias on him. So I've been a non-believer in Brad Lambert, and I think I need to, take an honest look and watch some of his games in the American Hockey League or in the NHL this year, wherever he's playing, and reassess and try and be open-minded about it, because I've been pretty down on him. He was on my do not draft list in his draft year, and I've been offered him in trades a couple times, and I just immediately rejected them without even really thinking about it. So I might have to, every once in a while, you got to do that. You got to be honest with yourself. You have an opinion about a player, and you're like, okay, so this is an opinion from 2 years ago. Is it still accurate? And, this is an opportunity where I think I might need to reassess, don't you think?
I mean, that's what I had to do. I was in the same boat as you. I didn't want him. I think I ended up ranking him close to where he got drafted in the NHL draft, like in the late 20s or 30s, which means I knew I wasn't going to get him anywhere because people were ranking him in the teens.
Right.
So it was basically effectively, like you said, do not draft. But I mean, I think you can't ignore what he's done, at least this season. Last season, I'm not sure. The WHL season, I'm not particularly convinced by that because Seattle was such a good team. But I think we
Yeah.
have it's and it's appropriate to reevaluate, right? If it's presented with new evidence, you should take another look. It's fair.
All right. So jury's back out on Brad Lambert. Next guy I'm also pretty set in my mind about, and it is a very positive opinion. And I'm talking about Lane Hutson, despite the fact that he's a Montreal Canadian. EP ranked him 27, and he's got 89% Fantrax rostership. So, Victor, on the last episode, there was a lot where we talked about players in real life that were better than in fantasy. And a common theme there was big physical defensive defenders, better in real life than fantasy. So the flip side of that is undersized offensive defensemen. And that's going to be a theme for this episode, I think. They're better for fantasy than real life. And well, Lane Hutson is just the poster boy for that. He is a 5'10", 161, and is offensively driven as you can get. Two major red flags with Lane are, or with undersized defensemen, I should say, are and things you want to look out for, right? So there's a lot of 5'10" offensive defensemen. Not all of them are going to make it. So some things you can do as a fantasy GM to help determine which players you want to roster and which ones you don't. The major red flags are, number one, is his size a weakness, right? So there's different players that are 5'10". Some of them are short, and some of them are small, and there's a big difference there. Can he compensate for his height and weight with smarts, positioning, skating, and stick work? If they're 5'10" and they're built like a fire hydrant and they're super quick and speedy, they're strong, they're always in the right position, they're never out of place, they're always between the offensive player and the goal, blocking passing lanes, using intercepting passes with their skill and their stick, and then that's not really that big a concern. And the second one is, can he play defense well enough to at least be average NHL defensively? All right, so for Lane Hutson, question number one, is his size a weakness or is he just short? But yeah, Lane Hutson's small. I mean, we saw him stand up to a bigger player at the, I think it was the World Juniors with USA when they eliminated Sweden, and this game started getting a little chippy. He stepped in against a bigger player and wasn't shy about being rough with them. But let's be honest here. He is not a physically intimidating player. We met them at the draft, Victor, and I wouldn't be nervous going into the corner against either Lane or Cole Hutson. And the other question, though, with Lane is, can he play defensively well enough at the NHL level? I think the answer is yes. I mean, we also, in that World Junior tournament, everyone was expecting him to just dominate offensively, be 2, 3, 4 points a game, just bananas, bananas, bananas. And he was okay offensively. He didn't like blow the doors open, but he did blow me away with his defensive play. He's played prime minutes for USA in that tournament. He played prime minutes for Boston University in the NCAA last year as a sophomore. And I thought that he really ran with the ball there. I thought he was more than adequate defensively most of the time. Yeah, there were some opportunities where, like in his first NHL game, there was a goal scored against Montreal, and he was looking pretty pedestrian on it, just kind of standing by and watching it happen and bang, it's in the net, and that's not going to fly. And, there's going to be moments like that in his NHL career where, he has defensive lapses and liabilities, and you just kind of have to live with those problems. But I don't think that's going to be consistently enough to make him a liability, and the offensive gains outweigh the defensive physical or negatives in his game. So I think he'll be an NHL player. I think he'll be in the NHL this year. I think he breaks camp with Montreal. And I think he's going to be a prolific offensive player. The defensive liabilities don't really impact his fantasy value. So he's going to be a good offensive player, which is great for his real life value and fantasy value. He's going to give Martin St. Louis some headaches sometimes with his defensive whoopsie daisies and growing pains. But, he's a rookie and he's going to be a young player. Those things are going to happen. I think Montreal will be fine to live with it. If he's not scoring, though, his value is really non-existent. So I think he's going to have to be an offensive player for them. And I think in short order, he'll be running the power play for them in Montreal. I think he'll be one of the top two guys. I don't think Mike Matheson offers much competition for prime minutes on the power play there. Do you, Victor? Do you think Lane Hutson is better in fantasy than real life? And I think even as a possibility, it's hard for defensemen to win the Calder Trophy. I think he'll be in the conversation as an honorable mention for the Calder this year. What's your take on Lane?
Well, I think it really all depends on how many games he gets, which I think is the hardest thing to assess. Is he actually going to play the number of games he needs to win the trophy? I think if he played all season, there's a pretty good chance that he absolutely could. But I'm not convinced that that's going to happen. I think that, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the defense on the Habs. I think he has the talent to do it. On the left side, they are a little bit better in terms of, Matheson, Gouley, Jacki. I think the right side has a little bit more opportunity to move up, so someone like Mayhew. Not that he can't play the opposite side, but I think that's hard for a young man to do. So I think that the more likely thing for Calder is that he plays a significant role for Laval this season. Maybe he gets some calls up here and there. Maybe things go really well, but I still think he has some defensive work to do. As you said, I thought part of what he did at the World Juniors was really impressive with his ability to defend, and that was a big improvement, but he still has some lapses, as you noted in his NHL debut. There were some adventures out there, and there was really exciting times both ways, and that's not something, if you're trying to win games, is what you want. So I don't know that he's going to play enough NHL games. I think he might be under half the season, maybe some call-ups here and there. So that would be my concern in terms of like a Calder pick. But I do think that he has huge upside and definitely better in fantasy upside, because the question with Lane is, can he be a 20 plus minute a night guy? Or is he going to be more limited offensive role, run the power play, but be more of a sheltered Tyson Barrie kind of guy? I think that he has the ability to be better than that, but it just remains to be seen how well he can improve his physicality and defensive game. Remains to be seen, but I'm high on him.
Fair enough. Who's next? We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours.
So next, I'm going to go with another defenseman, Scott Morrow. And Morrow, 61 on the EP list. He's someone who I'm pretty excited about. His rostership is 52% on Fantrax, so there's some opportunity out there to go grab him. He was a Carolina pick, 2021. I feel like I'm talking about a lot of Carolina players this time. 2021, 40th overall pick, 6'2", 194-pound right-handed D. He was definitely one of those that when he was drafted, I was like, who? Because he played in high school in his draft season, Shattuck St. Mary's, who, don't watch a lot of tape on them. He did play a few games in the USHL for the Fargo Forest, and then he went straight to the NCAA and basically put up massive numbers from day one. I mean, 33 points in 37 games, 31 points in 35 games, 30 points in 37 games. Those were his NCAA totals for UMass. Just stepped into pretty awesome production right away. He played a couple NHL games at the end of last season. He did not look out of place. I think that there's a pretty good chance that Morrow is another person who has a role in the NHL sooner than later. I don't necessarily think he's going to do that this year. I think it's hard to learn defense more than Nadeau, who we talked about. But the right side of the Carolina Hurricanes defense is not so stacked. I mean, you got Jalen Chatfield, who's a fine third pairing guy. Sean Walker, who's new. We don't know exactly how he'll work out, but he seems okay. And Brent Burns, who's 57 years old. So it's not going to last that much longer for Brent Burns. He's not actually 57, but he's pretty old. I believe he's 40 this year. So it's not going to last that
Yeah.
much longer.
Yeah. 39 turning 40. Like, that's graybeard.
Yeah, and he really seemed to struggle a bit last season. So he's gonna slow down, and maybe it'll just be ships passing in the night with Morrow taking Burns' spot. Maybe at the end of the season or next season, we'll have to see. But Morrow is a really solid defender. His handedness, I think, is gonna give him opportunity more than he could on the left side, because he would have to pass Gostisbehere, Orlov, and Slavin. I don't see that happening anytime soon. Best he could get is maybe third pairing there. So he's got some opportunity. He shoots a lot for a defenseman, 100th percentile in the NCAA. He hits a fair amount and his blocks are average. So his bash is overall 90th percentile, which is really good. His NHLer probability is high. He's just knocking on the door and he looks really, really ready. But I think there's some underrated offense here that he has shown the ability to do that. And I don't know that they have, I mean, obviously everyone knows about Nikishin, and I'm sure that Nikishin is going to be someone who maybe makes you a little bit worried about taking Morrow in fantasy. But I think, you know, Nikishin is someone who certainly can run a power play, but I don't know if they will. You know, we'll have to wait and see whether they give him that role. He seems more of your all-around stud, all situations type of defenseman. And so, you know, maybe they'll give some opportunity to someone like Morrow. And there isn't anyone else who's that much better than him in the system. So we'll see. There's some opportunity. And if nothing else, he could be like a 30 to 40 point defender with really great bash. Maybe not as great as Nikishin, but he's someone that I think you should be a little bit more excited about than 61st overall on that list. And looking at hockey prospecting, Morrow, he looks like a right-handed Josh Morrissey in this model. In fact, some of his equivalencies are a little bit higher. So I think that there's a world where he could be a pretty interesting asset. Pete, we know you hate D, so what do you think of Scott Morrow?
I actually like Morrow. One of the concerns I have with him is that, while he scored nice and consistently in his 3 seasons in the NCAA, we didn't really see much progression or advancement in his point totals. He was, he was a 33 point guy every year or thereabouts in his NCAA career. I do like his opportunity in the Carolina system. They've got, some turnover with their roster this season, and some guys departed as by a free agency. I don't think that's going to open the door wide enough for him to fill one of those holes on a full-time basis this season. And quite frankly, some AHL time adjusting to the pro level would behoove him. But I compared him in the Dobber Prospect report to Devin Taves. I gave him an upside of, 55 point player, 10 goals, 45 assists. I think for the better part of his career, though, he'll be in the ballpark of 45 points. I had him at 8 goals and 35 assists on average over his career, which is pretty fantasy relevant. So yeah, I like him. I got lots of time for this guy.
All right, I
Or
guess you don't hate Aldi. That's fair.
no. The rumors of me hating D are a little exaggerated. I just talked about Layton Hudson. I said good things. He's a defenseman, right?
Sometimes.
Sometimes he starts on the blue line anyways, and he works his way up the ice. My next guy, are we ready to move on?
Yeah.
Right, my next guy is not a defenseman, actually. It's Cole Yzerman, left wing for the New York Islanders. He is the 31st ranked prospect in the report. He has a 63% Fantrax rostership. He was drafted 20th overall by the Islanders, and Cam ranked him 9th overall for fantasy ranking the draft just recently. He is the all-time goal scoring leader for the NTTV, and he has some serious goal scoring upside. He also has some questions about compete, playmaking, defense, and physicality. I don't necessarily share all of these concerns, but there are some red flags there, and that's the reason why he went 20th overall and not inside the top 10. And he is definitely one of the best goal scorers in this draft class, if not the best natural goal scorer in the draft class. But perhaps the question here, Victor, is he better at fantasy or real life? I think it's is he going to play in the NHL or not? If he makes the NHL, he's going to score goals, and that's very valuable in both NHL and fantasy. And if those concerns that I talked about keep him out of the NHL, then his value is zero in both categories as well. I mean, we talked at the draft to some folks, and being selected by the New York Islanders on one hand is advantageous because their prospect pool is so terrible that he doesn't have a lot of competition for prospects pushing him for roster spots. And the New York Islanders have a very, very, very veteran roster with some very large cap hits. And I'm sure they'd be very interested in injecting some youth and entry-level contracts into their NHL roster in the very near future. But then on the other hand, the New York Islanders have a pretty atrocious track record of drafting and developing players as well. So there's some concerns and positives with the fact that he's an Islanders prospect as well. His blocks per 60 aren't too bad. You scored him as a 5 on the Fantasy Hockey Life player card, and his hits are even better. But really, with him, it's about shot volume, shots, and goal scoring. Everything else is a bonus, right? Like Alex Ovechkin light. Alex Ovechkin was all about the goals, but he also provided a significant amount of peripheral stats as well, which was all gravy. So that's my take on Cole Eisenman. I think he's going to be better in fantasy than real life, but if he doesn't make the NHL, he's not very valuable in either aspect, right? What's your take on Eisenman?
Well, I definitely think you hit the nail on the head there. It's really all about how much he plays, and that's really tied to his value in both places. He needs to show that he can play at least well enough at the NHL level, and his all-around game can be serviceable. And if he can do that, I think, he's going to score. I don't know how much he's going to do the other things in terms of his assist playmaking that has shown to be not super incredible, but as you mentioned, he does have some pretty decent other perifs, so there is some floor there. I don't have him in any places. Most people in any draft I was in reached for him before I was ready to, or I just didn't have the picks in that range, so I didn't end up with any shares of him. But I do think that he's someone who should be able to at least be a 50 to 60 point guy in the NHL, but it's really going to hinge on all those other factors of whether he gets there. And he's someone who certainly could score more goals than that. So it'll be really interesting. As you said, though, and as we've talked about before, the Islanders have a track record of drafting USNTDP guys that ended up busting out. So hopefully he's not the third of the Wahlstrom, Bellows, and then Yzerman of make. Hopefully it's not a trifecta of busts for Yzerman's sake.
Not the hat trick we're looking for.
No. All right, so my last guy, Sean Behrens, he's ranked 70th on this list, which is pretty low. I think there's some reasons for that. He's a little bit undersized, 5'10", 176 pounds. He was drafted in the second round, 61st overall, end of the second round back in 2021. He's a left-handed D, and he just finished up his career in the NCAA. He got his second NCAA championship. I mean, pretty amazing resume if you think about it. He was a leader on this team. He was given actually defensive player of the year for the team. So that was a pretty incredible honor. Best defensive defenseman in the NCHC. And that was part of the issue with him is when he was drafted, Behrens, they were talking about some of the same issues with some of the other undersized mobile defensemen who, couldn't defend so well. Well, he kind of flipped that narrative this season and really became a monster defensively. And when you watched him in those Frozen Four games, I know you watched some of those, Pete. He did not look undersized. He did not get pushed around. He was knocking other guys off the puck. He was kind of a menace in the corner, winning battles, winning pucks. And that's what you need to make it, especially if you're an undersized guy. So I think I guess the issue fantasy wise is what's the upside? Obviously, he's not passing Cale Makar because he plays for the Colorado. He's in the Colorado Avalanche system. Can he pass Devon Taves? Can he pass Sam Girard? I mean, he might end up being like Girard in terms of relevance. Maybe he can be a little bit higher than that. But I'm really excited about Behrens. I think he can be a pretty valuable asset. One thing I like to do is look at the Mitch Brown tracking data, as you know. And one thing that's really nice about this example in particular is you can see Sean Behrens from his USNTDB time all the way through his last NCAA season. And his defense went from 12th percentile to 100th percentile, basically being from one of the worst defensive players to one of the best defensive players. And that's pretty awesome. And his offense has kind of maintained being pretty solid. It dipped a little bit in his final season here. But he was so incredibly defensively that makes up for it. And so the offense is there. You know he can play defense now. There's a pretty high floor here for someone who can at least play, you know, transition, quick moving NHL style defense, and there's some physical elements there and some good defensive play. I think the Avalanche have a hell of a player here. When I talked with Megan Angley on our team preview series, she echoed the sentiments of the Avs that they're really excited about him. They might not put him in right away. He'll probably play most of the fun not all the season with the Colorado Eagles, but the wait time for Behrens is also short. I think you're getting a guy who could be pretty valuable pretty soon in the lineup. And he is pretty lowly. He's not as thought of as high as some other players. So in terms of the rostership of all the guys we talked about, Sean Behrens may be the lowest at 31%. So he is available. You could go out and grab him. And, you know, don't worry so much about, oh, he's never going to get top power play because Cale Makar's there. You never know what's going to happen. Maybe he gets traded. You know, Makar tends to have injuries here and there. Maybe he gets a role. Maybe he's on second power play. Like there's an opportunity for him to get some points. It's not going to be as high as Makar, but don't be too pessimistic on him. I think Sean Behrens is someone who deserves to be maybe a little bit higher. I understand why he is where he is on this EP list, but I think in fantasy you could bump him up a little bit because I think that there's a little bit more there. What do you think, Pete? Do you like Behrens?
I do. I like him a lot. I'm part of the Fantrix roster ship. You know, I talked with Hudson about the two concerns with the size and is physicality an issue for him? And you already talked about that and how it's not. Can he defend at a pro level? I think he's proven that he can. So those two concerns are just dismissed. What I do really like about him is his opportunity. And he made Bowen Byram expendable for Colorado. They traded him for Mittelstadt, and that opened up opportunity for Sean Behrens to make more of an impact. And this is going to be his first full season as a pro. So he's not slated to make the team. You've got Makar, Taves, Girard, Manson, Shillington, Brännström, Dahan, and Jacob McDonald as, you know, your defense core there. And four or five of those guys are signed through this season. So the season that Shillington and Brännström particularly have this year, and whether or not they can earn themselves a contract extensions with Colorado, will have a lot to do with Behrens' opportunity. And then you look at, okay, so what's his prospect competition? If a roster position does become open and Behrens plays well enough to earn, is there someone else who could also, you know, play well enough? And the answer is no, not really. Sam Olinsky, I think, is their next best defenseman. And after that, it's like nothing else really. I like Sam Olinsky a lot too, but he doesn't have the pedigree that Sean Behrens has. And Sam Olinsky, if I'm not mistaken, was a college free agent signing, right? So they don't really owe him anything. They, you know, like they're not gonna look like they have egg on their face if he busts out. No one's gonna care. Behrens is a high profile draft pick, so they're going to give him the opportunity to make them look good. Yeah, I like Behrens. I think he's got good opportunity, Victor, and I think he's got a lot of upside. All right. So my last guy is Matt Savoy. We'll talk about him a little bit next week too, but so I don't want to spend too much time on him. Spoiler alert, next week we're going to talk about prospects that have relocated this offseason and rather what that means for their fantasy upside. So, not to get too much into that, we're talking about Matt Savoy, who was ranked 74th on the EP Ringside article, and he only has a 65% Fantrax rostership. I was surprised by that, Victor. I thought it'd be higher. So, this is another offensive first kind of player that's undersized. And the move from Buffalo to Edmonton should benefit Savoy. You know, the Sabres have an abundance of undersized offensive wingers, as we seem to talk about it at some point on each episode. But Edmonton is pretty devoid of talented prospects. And so, you know, he's got a lot less competition from the prospect ranks in order to make the Oilers roster. He just has to crack the Oilers roster, and that won't be right away. You know, he played in junior last season for the most part. He started in the National Hockey League. He got a cup of coffee in the AHL on a conditioning stint, I think, and then was returned to junior and had a go at the World Juniors and then finished the season back in the dub and was like a 2 point a game player in his final season there. So he is ready to take on the pro game, So I'm really interested to see what he does in Bakersfield, where ironically he'll be replacing his brother Carter Savoy, who played last season in Bakersfield but has signed to play in Liga this year. So they just, I guess, they already got the jerseys. He just borrow his brother's old jersey. You know, looking at his fantasy hockey life card, he doesn't offer a lot in terms of hits or blocks. So, you know, I don't like his peripheral contribution very much, but which is not too surprising as an undersized player. You know, he's five, I think he's 5'10". So, you know, not a lot going for him if he's not scoring, but he does like to shoot a lot. And he's got some pretty nifty mitts and some pretty slick moves. So I hope that he pans out. And this, like Yzerman, this is another example of if he makes the NHL, his value will be higher in fantasy than it is in the NHL. But there's a possibility that this prospect turns out to be a bust, kind of despite his high draft pedigree. I've got some concerns with Savoy, Victor. I like the upside. I'm just not convinced on the certainty. What do you think?
I definitely have concerns. I've had concerns for a long time for with Savoy because being a smaller guy, he isn't super physical. He's more of a playmaker. You know, he's even not that much of a scorer, so he's relying more on the playmaking. And I don't know how much he's going to get to the inside. He's done it okay at times, but he's not necessarily super aggressive that way, and he's going to have a hard time with his size. So he's real crafty, he's real slick with his hands. I'm just not sure how well all that's going to translate to the NHL or AHL. I think we'll see that. He did play six AHL games last season with Rochester and had 5 points, but I don't watch that closely enough to know for sure how well that all worked. I know some people are penciling him in next to McDavid and Draisaitl and say he's going to get, you know, 60 plus points, but I just don't know that that's how realistic that is. And I think his off-puck game needs to come a long way because honestly, they have plenty of guys who can play with McDavid and Draisaitl. They don't need to put Savoy in that position. So, I think he needs to come a long way in terms of improving his all-around game, and I think he has to show it. For me, anyways, he would have to show it at a full AHL season to really convince me. But he should have that opportunity this year, and if he kills it for, you know, 20, 30 games in the AHL, I think he could get the call up, and he could show us all. I think he has the talent. This is going to be an important season for him because I could also see him just playing the whole season in the AHL and being like half point per game, and like you said, trending towards a bust, and that would be not terribly surprising, honestly, if that happened. So I'm a little lower on Savoy. I don't have any shares of him, and that's partially why, is because I have just remained skeptical of what the long-term high-end upside is for him.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why Buffalo felt the need to move one of those undersized offensive wingers. It speaks volumes that Savoy was the guy that ended up without a chair when the music ended. And I didn't really like the return that they got for him. I thought it was a pretty understated return, which goes to show you that the market value for him just wasn't very high. So if you're part of the Fantrax rostership for Savoy and you can sell him as a line mate for Connor McDavid and or Leon Draisaitl as a worst case scenario, and you find someone that will bite on that, I'd make that trade. I would look at expending that asset for that kind of return. You know, it might end up being a fair trade, which would be the best case scenario. But worst case scenario is he flames out and turns into nothing, and you made it like a bandit in your trade, and the poor schmuck that you traded with gets kind of burned. So yeah, I would be looking at flipping him if I were a fantasy rosterer.
Yep, me too.
All right. Well, anyways, I think we teased it a little bit there with the last guy for our next episode. That was my last guy, Victor. Do you have another player?
No, that's it. Hopefully this was helpful. And if you have any guys that you saw on the list that you were wondering about, high or low, or just want some feedback, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter X or in our Discord.
All right. Well, if you don't have any more guys, neither do I. Let's get out of here. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show. Like Victor said, if you want to chat about certain players or show ideas or trade options that you have, get us on X at DPR underscore show is the podcast handle. Victor's is at Victor Nuno 12, and mine is at Farling. Our producer is James Iacovone, and his is at Jim IKEHW. Don't forget to follow Hockey Pod Net for all the great podcasts on the network. They added a great one on the OHL. Highly recommend checking that show out. I've been enjoying it lately. So if you enjoyed us, tell everyone about us. Hit the like, share, subscribe, 5-star buttons. All right, everybody. Till then, next episode, keep your stick on the ice.